Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I am Misha Globerman, host of the Trampoline Hall Podcast. Trampoline Hall, as you know, is a lecture series that takes place in a bar in Toronto, sometimes in other cities, but usually in a bar in Toronto. People give lectures on all kinds of topics, sometimes serious, sometimes ridiculous, but with the one rule that they cannot speak on subjects on which they are professionally expert. It cannot be their job to know the thing. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. This is the Trampoline Hall Podcast. If you did not know it was a podcast, I'm very impressed. How did you get here? This is the Trampoline Hall Podcast. We do it in short seasons. We're sort of about halfway through the current season of 6 episodes, and then we'll do another one. All the lectures come from our vast Trampoline Hall lecture archive. And what are we going to do on this episode? Well, let's find out. On this episode, the topic is hummingbird migration, and the speaker is Lauren Barnes.
This. I think this is good. Hi.
Hi.
Maybe like.
Do you just turn it down?
Okay. Okay. Good. Great. In 2001, Nelly Furtado made a bold claim about the migration of birds. She claimed that she was like a bird because she didn't know where her home was or indeed where her soul was. But the thing about migratory birds is that they do actually really know. This is the thing. This is the whole point. I moved to Toronto 5 months ago, and one of the things that I've been, particularly into since I got here is the whole new continent of bird species that I've been exposed to. The bird that has preoccupied me most since I arrived is one that has, in fact, so far eluded me. This is the ruby-throated hummingbird, rather. I've never seen a hummingbird in real life. They only live in the Western Hemisphere, so up until this point, I've not really been like in the place where they might be. There are 350 species of them, and most of them just stay in the tropics, which kind of makes sense. Like, this is the place where there's like sunshine, red and orange flowers. It's like, why would you go anywhere else? But there are 12 species of hummingbird which are migratory. And the only one of these that is found in eastern Canada and that we might stand a chance of seeing in Toronto is the ruby-throated hummingbird. I guess the first thing that kind of blows my mind about these birds is their size. An adult measures between 7 and 9 centimeters, like this kind of thing, from the tip of its beak to the end of its tail. They're also very, very light, so because the bones are hollow and then it has all these like tiny air sacs so that it can fly, it weighs between 2 and 6 grams. A teaspoon of sugar is 5 grams, so it's like a very, very light thing to be like a living being that contains a heart and a brain and all of that stuff. I had no idea that that hummingbirds lived in Canada until my sister-in-law came to visit me in March. We were, you know, encountering the ice sheets and treacherous conditions that seem to be what happens here. And then she noticed this this hummingbird feeder in someone's garden. I guess everyone knows like what this looks like. It's like it's made of red plastic. It's got these like pretend flowers on it. People put sugar water in it and hummingbirds drink out of it. I was totally baffled by this. This didn't seem to be a place where a hummingbird might possibly be able to live, or you know, even if it was going to go somewhere else, like anywhere that was possibly warm enough for it to live, seemed an impossibly long flight away. So this was like kind of weird for me. I'm not the only person to have been baffled by the migration of birds. For many years, people just didn't know what happened when birds went away at the end of one season and then came back again. In the 16th century, apparently, people thought that swallows would, rather than migrate, swallows would like dive to the bottom of lakes and then like bury themselves all stacked together like in a tin of sardines, and they'd just stay there for the winter, and then like they would come up again you know, when spring came around. That seemed to be more logical than flying to another place. Aristotle also had a theory about bird migration, or not migration, in fact. It was kind of an early version of the idea of, like, if you haven't seen them in the same room together, are they actually the same person? So he thought that, like, there was one species that mutated into another one when the autumn came around, and then when spring came, they, like, mutated back into the other thing. They were just different species of bird, and they were, like, going in opposite directions. Things have moved on a bit since that point, but there are still some crazy ideas that seem to be around, especially when it comes to hummingbirds. So I started, you know, Googling to try and find out what was going on. It was particularly this one you know, Google does like related searches that it suggests that you might be interested in. One of the first ones that came up was, do hummingbirds ride on the backs of geese to migrate? I hadn't thought of this as a possibility, but like, you know, I can kind of see why people might think that. Apparently it was quite widespread as an idea. Geese are quite big. They're like almost, they're like the planes of the bird world somehow. Like they're like as close as you can get to a plane while still being a bird, I think. So like it makes sense. And it's kind of nice, I think, to think of these Canada geese like maintaining their liberal reputation by giving these hummingbirds from Mexico a ride. It's, you know, I can see why people might buy it. This is actually not what happens. They fly all alone, totally separated from their families, in a series of non-stop flights, each one lasting up to 24 hours. So each spring, they will fly up to 4,000 kilometers, traveling from as far as Panama, Costa Rica, and Mexico, all the way to Canada, and even as far north as Labrador. This is, I mean, my mind is blown by this. The way that they can do this is by having, it's like the biggest, the fastest metabolism of any warm-blooded creature. So like they basically double their body weight in a couple of days. It's like eating 300 hamburgers in a single day, I think the equivalent is. And then they fly for 24 hours and like burn it all off, just like that. And then they have to do it all again. It's kind of, I mean, wouldn't we all love to have metabolisms like that, I guess. So once the hummingbird arrives from Mexico, they get here, they have like the hummingbird equivalent of a one-night stand. They have babies and then like off they go again. They don't travel together at all. So like the males will leave, then the females will leave, and then there's just like this whole generation of abandoned offspring who, when they're only a couple of months old, have to like figure out what to do and like try and get out of this place, which is soon going to become really cold and inhospitable. I have to say that thinking about, you know, the route that they take and the challenges that they face has put my own personal migration into some degree of perspective. The flight is really absurdly long for such a small thing, but they also really don't make it very easy for themselves. So rather than going over land, they, or many of them at least, fly across the sea, like right across the Gulf of Mexico. So it's like 800 kilometers that they fly over the open ocean from the Yucatan Peninsula to the southern US. So if you were to fly over land, obviously you could like stop, have some nectar, have a rest. If it started to rain, you could, you know, just have a couple of days off from the trip. When you're flying over water, you just have to keep going. Apparently, it takes 20 hours of non-stop flying. This is when the wind is behind you, so you've kind of like timed your journey and gone with the wind. If the wind changes and suddenly you've got headwinds coming towards you, then like that's kind of it. There's nothing you can do. You're just going to run out of energy. All of the nectar / hamburgers have been burned, and then you plummet to your death. There is hope. If you find yourself crossing the route of a kindly shrimp fisherman, then they might let you hitch a ride on board. This is apparently something that has happened. There are some very nice, heartwarming stories of fishermen in the Gulf of Mexico who will find themselves with like a hummingbird on board, and the hummingbird will just refuse to leave until they get to Florida. So. You know, there are ways. Apparently on oil rigs, they also put out bird feeders so that some hummingbirds who clock that, that bird feeder might be able to take they might take that in on the way and that way avoid plummeting to their death and being washed up on the beach. So then there's the whole question of like, how do they figure out where to go? Like, how do they navigate? It seems that the scientific literature is still a work in progress on the subject. It's still something that people are really trying to figure out. As far as I can tell, and like how I would summarize the literature is, they just get a feeling inside them. I can kind of relate to it, right? You sometimes have this feeling. It has to do with the temperature. It has to do with like number of flowers around, number of like tiny spiders and bugs, and also to do with daylight hours. So when all of this kind of these changes start happening, then their hormones start to tell them to, eat lots, start preparing for a treacherous journey. Amazing. It's thought actually that the most likely way that they navigate is by like having this way of seeing the Earth's magnetic field. There's like a patch in their field of vision, which is either slightly lighter or slightly darker. And using that patch, that patch is where the North Pole is. So like by using that, they can figure out where to go in relation to that. I was kind of baffled by this because like if you're going south, then surely you have to like look behind you all the time to figure out, No one quite knows even how long the journeys might take and what causes them to choose particular paths. Because they're so tiny, it's quite difficult to put on like one of those little tags on their tiny feet. The sense is that it's like between 1 week and 6 weeks, and it really depends on like what happens along the way, what the weather's doing, probably like some other mystical signals that they receive that science has not yet figured out. But they do stop, so probably like five or six times, maybe something like this, along the way. So ruby-throated hummingbirds might be born in Canada, but they actually end up spending quite a lot of time elsewhere. They definitely wouldn't qualify for the 183 days that you need to be here for residency purposes. So they're really like going across jurisdictions and never with any kind of paperwork. They're small enough that the US border forces can't see them, just. So they are truly citizens of nowhere, or perhaps citizens of everywhere. In light of this, it strikes me that perhaps I was misinterpreting Nelly Furtado all along. It's perhaps significant that she herself was the daughter of Portuguese immigrants to Vancouver, and she later moved to Toronto to develop her music career. I think she actually had a robust understanding of the mechanics of bird migration. I think that what she was trying to say wasn't literally that birds don't know where they're going, but that the very concept of a static, singular home wasn't something that was familiar to them. What I think she was trying to say was that for the ruby-throated hummingbird, home is not a singular locale, but something multiple and complex.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Are there any questions? Anything anyone would like to know? Yes, over there, yeah. What brought you to Canada 5 months ago?
I got a job.
There you go. The best reason. Anything else? Does that answer your question? Yeah, it does, sure. Okay, yes, what did you want to know? Yes.
This is sort of a sad question.
It's a sad question. Thank you for the warning. All right. What percentage of birds make it?
How many
plummet to their deaths? Just to make clear why it's a sad question.
I think I kind of mentally blocked that out when I realized that was, you know, that was what happened. I read that a lot die in the first year, but once they get through the first year, then they're like kind of okay and they can live till they're 8 or 9.
Like a lot die in their first year in the migration, or just
yeah.
in general of all hummingbird threats or whatever?
In migration, I think,
okay.
Yeah.
So there you go. So at least, so it's not as sad as you think, because really only the children die a lot. anything else you'd like to know? Yes, over there, yeah. Yes, you. Yeah, you.
Did you find out if they return to the same place up here, or are they home stickers?
Do they return to the actual same place up here?
Yes, they do. Like, precise, same bird feeders.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. So they really do. I mean, so they're not, like, they really do know that part of where their home is.
Yeah.
They go.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Apparently, they can remember, like, individual flowers that they've been to. Yeah.
What?
They have, like, their brains are twice the size of humans, like, proportionally speaking.
Yeah, proportionally, but not. Yeah. But that's really an important distinction for me.
Yeah.
you know, like, whatever. I'd like to see them try to host a whimsical lecture series. I don't mean to start competing with them so early in the Q&A.
I mean, it's fair,
I'll let them do them. Okay. Yes, over there, yeah.
Have you bought a hummingbird feeder?
Have you bought a hummingbird feeder is the obvious question.
No, I really should do that.
So just to be clear, so you were sort of bemoaning the fact. I'm not sure, is bemoaning fair? I don't know if you're bemoaning it. But, like, you seemed sad that you hadn't seen a hummingbird.
I mean, my front yard is shared with my landlord, so I feel like I just moved in. I don't want to be like, this is where I'm going to seek out the hummingbirds now. It feels, I don't know.
Who we now know will make that place their home for the rest of their lives.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's not like a little thing, like they're just passing through. Right. So you're waiting, what, for a better relationship with your landlord, kind of?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, they're really nice.
They're nice? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So does that answer your question? Yeah, okay. All right, good. So not yet. Anything else anyone would like to know? Yes, you're over there, yeah.
Well, I'm worried about the abandoned hummingbirds. How do they figure out?
The abandoned, you mean the babies?
Yeah.
You're worried about the abandoned hummingbirds, which is to say every single hummingbird baby ever born, is that right? But that is all of them, right? That is all of them.
That's
right?
Like, all
not,
of them.
It's not like they come from a broken home.
No.
They're just every single one of them. Right?
Yeah. So, like, you know, with geese, like, the baby goose, or it's not even a baby, like, the adolescent goose will go with the parent geese. And, like, the first migration, it will just follow them in whatever, like, formation, and then it just knows. So that's, like, fine. The hummingbird just figures it out. That's...
So you don't have to worry about it. They just figure it out. You didn't even have a question. You were just like, I'm worried for them. And that snuck right by me. But so what, did you, was there a question? Or did you just want to share the feeling? What happens to them? And the answer, we told us.
Yeah.
They figure it out with their enormous brains, twice the size of your brain and my brain, proportional, if you only weigh 2 grams. But that is, that's incredible. It's remarkable. So there you go. So are you less worried about them? All right, cool. All right, thank you. Good. Anything else? Anything else anyone would like to know? Oh, yes, on the back. Yeah. Would you like to fly in the style of what bird?
It's a two-part question.
That's why I couldn't even hear it. So would you like to fly? Let's just assume yes. And if so, if you could fly in the style of what bird would you most like to fly? Is the better. That's the better part.
Yes, I would like to fly.
Yes, you'd like to fly, right? Because you're not an idiot,
first,
right?
Yes, I would like to fly. Not in the style of the hummingbird. It's like...
Why not?
It's too much, isn't it? It's like exhausting.
It does not seem fun.
No.
I agree.
I think maybe a gannet.
A what? People are really like this gannet.
That it's like a very large...
I've never heard that bird name said.
It's,
seabird. It's a
it's
gannet?
It's like much more like a slower flap.
A slower flap.
Yeah.
Would that be like, would your answer just be the slowest flapping bird? Like if someone was like, there's a bird that flaps slower than a gannet, you'd be like, I'd like that?
Maybe.
Okay, so the answer would be to fly in the way that involves the least flapping. So a hummingbird would actually probably be the bird you would least like to fly like, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I would say like bird I would least like to fly like, but like I think there are other things about it that I do like.
So you'd like
that
to
I
be,
could take, I, yeah.
So the general lifestyle, if you could fly like a gannet. But have, what is it about the hummingbird life that's appealing to you?
I mean, the metabolism thing, I think, is great.
But again, it's funny because, again, you have to scale it. Because you'd be like, oh, yeah, over the course of several days, I could lose 1.5 grams. So in some ways, it's not so awesome, right?
Yeah, it's true. You have to.
But you
would
want the proportional.
Work on all of the proportions.
So
yeah,
you would, so just to be clear, what you would like would be able to gorge yourself on snacks, double your weight, and then lose that weight in 20 hours over the Gulf of Mexico. Like you'd be like rushing a trampoline hall. You'd be like, I lost 100 pounds on my way over here.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Cool. While slowly flapping. Okay. All right. I sympathize. Okay, cool. Any other questions? Anything else people like to know? Yes, you, sir.
What kind of songs do they have?
What kind of songs do they have? What kind of songs do they have?
I actually really don't know. Like, I've never seen one. I didn't research the whole, like, sounds part of them.
So does anyone know, like, a hummingbird song? What is it? Do you... These guys know. These... It's like chick 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 chick. How? Why is that? Why is that not a song? Oh, it's clicky. Not like a winter wren. Just to put it in perspective. Right. So it's not like. So I guess some birds have like an actual melody that we would recognize as a melody, and for them it's more like a sounds. So any of these hummingbirds you could just mistake for a buzzing wire, you said. Okay, all right. Does that answer your... Who asked the question? Does that answer your question? It went over there. Are you happy with that?
Yes.
Do you approve the answer? Okay, good. All right, well, there you go. Wait, I hear it. Did you guys just hear it? Oh, did you find it? I thought it was just like a ghost, but you found... You like looked it up on your phone? It's on you. It's on... Can you play it again?
Yeah.
All right. Sounds like a buzzing wire. It's true. There you go. Well, there you go. So now at least you've heard a hummingbird. Half your all right.
Just need to hear it in real life.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Anything else people would like to know? Yes. Yes.
I'm just wondering what the origin of the kind of
Nerbus. What is that idea? Like, where does that idea come from? Where does that idea come from? Why do people think that about the kind of?
Very interesting question. apparently, it was John James Audubon, the ornithologist, who, I read this, and then I was like, not sure. So this is one of the reasons why I didn't include it. But apparently he shot a goose, like, because he was, like, you know, it was an old school kind of ornithology in which you would, like, shoot a bird in order to then study it. Apparently he shot this goose and then like it landed on its back and then he like lifted the goose up to start inspecting it and then this hummingbird flew out. So he was like, oh, the hummingbird was riding on the back of the goose. Yeah.
Ornithology has come so far.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so crazy to be like, that's what it was.
Yeah.
You like shoot a bird and then like have a crazy speculation.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So when you asked that, I thought it would be some vague thing, but you actually know the name of the ornithologist. So there you go. That you can blame that guy. All right, great. Anything else? Anything else you would like to know? Any other questions? Do you have any? Oh, sorry, yeah. Yep. Do you read anything about the myth of putting dye in the sugar water? No. What is the myth of putting dye in the sugar water?
People think that hummingbirds will see the water better.
People think they will see it better if you dye it because it looks like a flower or something? Is that the... Or just because it's... Right. You can buy hummingbird sugar water dye? But it's bad for the hummingbirds because it's artificial coloring, which is bad for all of us. Is that right? So there you go. That answers a question. Did you know? No, that's a question and an answer. You've taken the whole show just taking place right there in you.
Good, really good to know.
Does that help you?
Yeah. Okay. When I get the hummingbird feeder.
How do you feel about
it?
Yeah, so when you get, do you feel that, do you have like, oh, okay, all right, yes, you ma'am, yes. Yeah, where are you going to see a hummingbird in Toronto?
I don't know. I mean, this hummingbird feeder was like on Niagara Street, like it was round the corner.
That is the sort of street hummingbirds would be on.
I don't know. I think that everywhere there's like all of these maps online where people report the first hummingbird of the season, and they're like kind of, you know, all over Toronto. So
How hopeful are you feeling? Not.
I mean, I just think with birds, you can't, like...
You can't hope?
You can't hope too much. And
really? I don't.
You can't, like, seek it out somehow. Like, you have to wait for it to...
It's like an entire human hobby. It's like bird watching, which consists entirely of hoping. Like, seeking out and making hopes about birds. You've just insulted the entire birding community. But isn't that, it's fair. I mean, it's a different, so you would like to see a hummingbird, but you don't want it. I was wondering what steps you take, but it seems like even for you, even the step of hoping is more action than you're willing to take toward this goal. Is that right?
Seek too much, then, and if you're like seeking a particular thing, then maybe it won't come.
Whoa.
I don't know.
All right. Has that served you well with other goals? Like, just as an example, is there anything else in your life where you're like, oh, I'm glad that I didn't hope for that because it wouldn't have come to me if I'd hoped for it and then taken steps toward it? Like, is there an example of that for you? Okay, so just birds. That's fair. All right. We had a hand up over there. Oh, yes. All right. Yeah. Could hummingbird overpopulation become a problem where the air would be thick with them? Is that the specific thing? And do you see... Okay, and you seem enthusiastic about the possibility. Do you think that could happen?
Apparently populations are healthy, not growing, but like kind of, you know, stable at the moment. So... maybe. I don't know. I feel like there's the whole question of, like, what happens with climate change. Like, it could go either way, I guess.
Right.
I don't know.
So you're not particularly worried about it?
No. It could be great, no?
So that's it. I think Fafiel, that's the other. So why did you ask?
Like, if
us and all of our friends and family were to get hummingbird ear feeders, and then there would be, do you think, all right, would you be okay with that personally?
Yes, it would be nice.
Okay, well, I think that's all you're looking for. We'll wrap it up there then. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Laura Barnes.
Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Amy Langstaff. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Our coordinating producer is Kate Bars. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook. If you enjoyed the podcast, you can really help us out by leaving a rating or review on iTunes. It helps a lot. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.